Welcome to SDI Encounters, a podcast from Spiritual Directors International. I'm Matt Whitney. Thank you so much for listening. I offer a heartfelt welcome to new listeners and a welcome back to existing subscribers. If you like this show, please do click on the subscribe button. Here we offer a wide range of perspectives, stories, and conversations centered around community, spiritual companionship, and spiritual care. You'll find additional information, including videos, webinars, and digital publications at our website, sdiworld.org. Support for this podcast comes from Seeking Connection Across Generations, Spiritual Directors International's annual gathering of spiritual companions happening in Bellevue, Washington, March 14th through March 17th, 2019. Be spiritually replenished by a variety of spiritual leaders and participate in workshops to nourish the mind, body, and soul. Experience a community of integrity and celebrate our global contemplative calling. Learn more at our website, www.sdievents.org. Come as you are, but come ready for transformation. In this episode, Imam Jamal Rahman sits down for a conversation with Reverend Sefu Anil Singh Molaris at the SDI Studios in Bellevue, Washington. Brother Jamal is a popular speaker on Islam, Sufi spirituality, and interfaith relations. Since 2001, Jamal has been collaborating regularly and actively with Rabbi Ted Falcon and Pastor Don McKenzie. They are affectionately known as the Interfaith Amigos, and they travel the country sharing a message of inclusive spirituality. Along with his Interfaith Amigos, Brother Jamal has been featured in the New York Times, on CBS News, the BBC, and various NPR programs. He is co-founder and Muslim Sufi minister at Interfaith Community Sanctuary and adjunct faculty at Seattle University.
All right, well, Jamal, welcome.
And thank you.
Thank you for being here. We're very excited about you participating in SDI's conference in March.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it with my Interfaith Amigos.
Thank you. It'd be wonderful to have you. So the theme of the conference is seeking connection across generations. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about who were the seminal figures in your childhood that inspired you to become an imam, to follow the religious life. Was there one person, were there several people that you looked up to that really kind of initiated you on this path?
For me, I'm very blessed because I had very wonderful parents, father and mother. And particularly from my father's side, that includes my paternal grandfather, we come from a lineage of Islamic spiritual teachers. So my father and mother, they modeled the need to really live a balanced life. You know, the famous saying is, to live a life of fulfillment and contentment, work equally in the visible world and invisible world. And there were wonderful models of that. My father was a very successful diplomat. My mother was a very loving mother, but also very capable in the diplomatic world. So they combined both the heaven and the earth. So that was a beautiful model for me in that sense, having a foot in the visible world and the invisible world.
How do you have a foot in the invisible world?
Basically, by authentically becoming aware, like Rumi says, there is traffic and trade in those realms. I can parrot it, that, wow, there's an invisible world, there is God. But as the Islamic teachers say, that's nice, but can you move from a knowledge of the tongue to a knowledge of the heart? So for me personally, my understanding of the invisible world was a knowledge of the heart, when actually in my life, my story is my father and mother in 1991, they both died tragically. And suddenly I was an orphan in that sense. And that made me realize there is an invisible world. They're dead, they're gone. And I love the insight of Rumi because that applies to me so wonderfully well. He says, there are two veils in the way of becoming a seeker. The veils of health and wealth. when my health is good or that of my loved ones, when there is wealth, not just money, but also emotional security. All this talk about spiritual direction, you know, prayers, invisible world, is not only irrelevant, it's very inconvenient until inevitably one of the veils will shatter. When they shatter, suddenly deeper questions. Why me? What's going on? And really, for a Muslim, the Quran suggests the very important question is, I need help. But I need help from a source greater than human personality, larger than a human institution. And I think the death of my parents brought me to that point. I need help. But from something much higher and deeper from what I know. That is the invisible world. Call it God, call it spirit, call it divinity. You know that wonderful poet, 14th century Hafiz? Mm-hmm. He has this wonderful line. He says, something missing in my heart tonight has made my eyes so soft, my voice so tender, my need for God absolutely clear. You know, God is a synonym for mystery. What I call the invisible world. You don't have to call it God, but suddenly you feel that connection with presence, and I need help.
So you asked for help in a deeper way than you ever had before.
That's right, yes, yes.
And how did the invisible world or God respond to your call?
I feel that in that time of need, for the first time, I had a palpable feeling of what is called in Islamic spirituality, the glow of presence. Mm. Not that I experienced God, but some aspect which is sort of unexplainable. It's a very sad time, very deep, tragic moments, but infused in that is a sense of hope and joy. And it's hard to explain, but that really I feel manifests only because you connect with something higher than your personality. So I think that when there was this great need for help, for some sort of understanding, for some sort of consolation, I think I connected in a very fractional way with mystery. And that, in a sense, made me a seeker. It also motivated me to really break out of my hypnotic trance, the pattern of just doing things by rote, and got in touch with that yearning. I really want to become a more complete, developed human being. I really want my life to have more meaning. I want to go beyond living, as it is said, a life of quiet desperation.
So by the time your parents died, and you come from this line of Islam, spiritual leader, Islamic yeah. spiritual leaders. And so I have to think that you were doing more than just going through the motions even before they died.
Yes.
And you mentioned that they were your main mentors
right.
and main models. And yet there was a big change.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about that, because
yes.
if you weren't going through the motions
yes.
before and
yes.
you had a genuine heart and spirit
yes.
for your calling,
yes.
What was it that changed uh-huh. really, really?
Yeah, I think it can be summarized by that verse which finally splashed in my heart, that I moved from a knowledge of the tongue to a knowledge of the heart. It was real. I connected with death in more than just a theoretical way. My parents have died. And that, in a sense, maybe for me, opened up my heart. And I moved in a small way, from my head to my heart. And that made all the difference. And I began to realize we are steeped in mystery within and without. And again, I love the words of Rumi, but now it began to splash in a much deeper way. His famous verse about mystery, sell your cleverness. Sell your cleverness and buy bewilderment. Everything is so bewildering. And you really want at that point to have your life have more substance, more meaning. It changes you.
Yeah. You're a teacher.
Yes.
You have this community of believers who follow your every word, who read your books, who attend Interfaith Amigos events. What would you say is the essence of your teaching?
These are mostly seekers, and we believe very much, like you do also, in everything being non-hierarchical. And I think what everybody is hungry for, and which I became hungry for when my parents passed away, two things. One is, I realized that at the core of it all, we are here on Earth, placed on Earth for two main reasons. Number one, to really become a more complete human being. And secondly, to really be of authentic service, to make a difference, for life to have meaning. So we find that people are very hungry for, how do I become more complete as a human being? Which boils down to, how can I find simple, practical steps to transform my ego in a way that it moves from the ego being a commanding master to a personal assistant, to be able to really evolve into the fullness of my being? And then secondly, how can I be of service in a way that is authentically fulfilling for me? I'm singing the song, I came here to sing. The great mystics say, yes, become a lamp, a lifeboat, or a ladder. Be of service. I love the words of Tagore, which resonate for me, who says, you know, here you are on earth, stringing and unstringing your instruments, stringing and unstringing your instruments, but the song you came here to sing remains unsung. So they want to know, how can I sing that song which is already within me?
Yeah. How do you teach others to sing that song?
You know, by actually modeling it yourself, telling your story, what opened you up, what made you move from your mind to your heart, on the timeline of your life, what were some of the events that really, through joy, through sorrow, and through practices that you actually incorporated, you're able to slowly, little by little, move beyond the ego and find meaning in life by being of service in your own way.
In your congregation, there's people who are at different levels in their own spiritual evolution,
yes,
in their own spiritual journey. There's probably people who are much more mature than others in their spiritual evolution, and some that are less. How do you minister, or how do you teach across all of those levels? And so that's the first part of the question. And the second part is, when you find a special being that really speaks to you, how do you mentor her or him?
Basically, I think the reason people are attracted to our house of worship is, as an institution, we focus very little on recruitment or fundraising. Mm. And we really focus on sharing the spiritual message from the different traditions. And in our house of worship, people, they form communities. They hunger for, and they're able to connect with and find what is called circles of love. This is Rumi's insight. Please come out of the circle of time and enter the circle of love. So they're able to find what I think I would call authentic community. And in that authentic community, people help one another to become a better human being, help one another to become more vulnerable, help one another to find that song they want to sing. But this is a process of connecting with the other and creating your own circle of love. And then somebody special they might find, who becomes a mentor, and they actually have become friends, and through that person who's probably older, more mature, through his or her modeling, the other person learns.
Speak a little more about modeling. I think it's interesting, and really at the heart of this, what we're trying to explore with this conference is both the sides of that equation, the idea of being a model to show others how you can respond in a non-hierarchical way, where, you know, the Buddha said in the Magiya Sutta that the highest spiritual embodiment is to be a true friend to someone.
Yes.
So how speak about that modeling.
You know, I love the story of Confucius, who had some young students. And people would say some of those young students were superior, actually, to Confucius in certain aspects of their character. And they would say, how is it that, you know, they are your students? So Confucius, of course, who had that maturity of age and of experience, he would say, you know, for example, this particular person who is my disciple is far more courageous than I am. But he doesn't know when to be cautious. That's why he chooses to learn and, you know, have me mentor him. The other person is far, far more eloquent than I am, says Confucius, but he or she doesn't know how to sometimes just say a simple yes or no for an answer. Third one, I'll give one more example. Says this other person is so regal, dignified, elegant, but doesn't know when to be humble and unassuming. So the mentor, who's probably older, is more mature with experience, has a richness of experience that is, you know, invaluable, that the student can learn from. And the teacher can learn from the student by his or her freshness of ideas, precious creativity. So it's a two-way street.
Spiritual companionship is key to what you just said. Spiritual friendship, modeling, and also embodying compassion and honoring God at the same time by doing all of those things. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of a spiritual companion in the Sufi tradition, your tradition?
Yes. You know, there's a wonderful saying of Sufi master Ibn Khafif, who says, and especially if it's intergenerational, he says, find someone the sight of whom reminds you of God, the awe of whom moves your heart, and is someone who counsels you not with the tongue of words, but with the tongue of deeds. So just by being with this person, in the presence of this person, who is humble, who just does his or her work, and is establishing a friendship, so much is being transmitted in that particular way. So it's friendship, it's that connection, it's that doing of collaborative, what is called righteous deeds. Let's interconnect and do a project that serves the common good. It could be social justice, it could be earth care, it could be doing spiritual practices together in a group of people, like what in Islam is called zikr. You get together, zikr means remembrance, and you begin to chant sacred verses together, and eventually it might sound like it's by rote. But then as you go deeper into it, as you're more able to be present in the presence of majesty, of splendor, then in a sense you begin to experience what mystics call a sweetness that existed before honey or bee. You begin to become infused with what is called the glow of presence. And it happens just by in that circle of companions. You're doing some spiritual practices, in this case, chanting sacred verses.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You and the Interfaith Amigos, your partners, Ted and Dave, the Pacific Northwest Amigos, are going to be holding an event for SDI in March.
Yes.
Speak to us a little bit. Give us a little taste of the kinds of things that you might be offering.
Well, you know, we offer insights on various serious topics, and we also offer a lot of humor. And we really believe that some of the most profound truths are conveyed through humor. That's one aspect. The other aspect is the Interfaith Amigos, both the local ones and the national one, which includes Pastor Don McKenzie. We have become very good friends, and that is the key. Ever since 9/11, we have been meeting regularly, not on an ad hoc basis, only during certain events, but regularly, at least twice a week, ever since 9/11, 17 years, and with the local Interfaith Amigo, I think for the last 7-8 years. So what has happened is, we have a heart-to-heart connection, and we find that when we have become friends, no matter what our theological differences, now they no longer loom as a threat, no matter what the differences are. So we know that the best way to overcome polarization is to really connect on a human level with the other. I think that probably is our biggest contribution, that we are modeling the fact that if you can really connect on a human level, many, many opportunities open up. Many doors open up.
You've been a long-time member of Spiritual Directors International.
Yes.
And can you share with us why you joined SDI in the first place?
Yes.
And how you see the evolution of the organization to the current, to its current state?
Yes. You know, when I first joined, I was very delighted because I knew that it's very important to nurture my body, be practical. But what is going to nurture my soul, my spirit? It needs to be fed. That's one reason I joined Spiritual Directors International. And the other reason was we all need community. You see, there's a wonderful saying in Sufism that even prophets sought companions. The mystics say a wall standing alone is useless. Add to it other walls, it can support a roof, even a granary. Only when ink joins with a pen can the blank paper say something. So community is critical, but particularly authentic community. And I feel that Spiritual Directors International offers authentic community where you are really able, besides feeding your body, you're able to really nurture and nourish the soul. That's critical.
Thank you. Thank you for that shameless plug.
No. You know, and also I must say, what really has excited me very much is in Spiritual Directors International, there is so much of diversity happening more and more. And that is so critical in this time and place, that we really honor and celebrate the other and the other's religion. So, if I may quote this wonderful saying in Islamic mysticism, that, you know, ordinary people, they create circles of friendship with those with whom they have outer similarities. But the wise, and it is more advisable, you connect with those with whom you have inner similarities. A love of truth, an aspiration to really enjoy spiritual companionship, to experience, if you believe in God, the glow of presence. It doesn't matter what your religion, what your culture, what your race, what your age. What matters is the kinship of spirit. And I think, for sure I know, Spiritual Directors International offers that. And really, I'm not saying it to be nice, it is not a matter of it being helpful, it is a matter of our survival to feed not only our bodies, but also nurture and nourish our souls.
Jamal, you often talk about how the universe is not made of atoms, it's made of stories.
Yes.
Why do you think stories are so essential to our being and obviously the being of the universe as a whole?
Because we really have to connect on a heart-to-heart level. And what really splashes in the heart is our life stories. not the stories of our theology or the politics, but really simple everyday life questions where I am truly connecting with you on a human level. Our families, our joys, our sadness, our sorrows, the difficulties we face in life, the successes we experience. Those stories, they have not only personal, they have authentic meaning. So maybe I should say personal stories are those that really splash in our hearts, and they go beyond the barriers of theology, of race, of culture, of age. They really connect us at a core level, soul to soul. That's why I think human stories are critical.
Wonderful. And the final one is, we started this conversation by remarking that here in the Northern Hemisphere, we're in the heart of winter.
Yes.
A season that is associated with death, yes. A season of contemplation, a season of reflection, a season for exploration of some of the deeper themes that we often try to avoid in our own daily lives. Speak a little bit about death from your perspective and from the perspective of the tradition that you embody.
Yes. Well, the Quran makes it very clear that every single human will taste death. We know that. But do we really quite on a heart level believe that? I love that wonderful insight from several traditions, particularly from Hinduism, that says that this is the biggest mystery of human beings. They don't quite believe they will die, or they could die anytime. It's always going to happen to the other. And as proof, they say, if you really believed you would die, you could never hold a grudge or be mean. But the truth is, we will die. And if we have that understanding of impermanence, everything is temporary, I think our thinking and our behavior would change. Which is why the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he would himself, as a spiritual practice, as a meditation, he would very often visit grave sites, go to graveyards, and he would tell his followers, please, visit graveyards. Not because I want you to be filled with morbid thoughts of death, but to realize that life is impermanent. Therefore, focus on that which is living and become more alive, and focus on that which needs to be said and that needs to be done, rather than wait for a later time. Do it now.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Brother Jamal says, the universe is made up of stories. Your story matters. Telling your story gives meaning and purpose to who you are. Share your story with someone, and share it not out of self-importance, but in service. What parts of your story might be an encouragement to someone else? How might someone else see themselves in your story? Brother Jamal also says, the song you came here to sing remains unsung. What are the lyrics to your song? Are there lyrics to the song of your life that remain unsung? Meditate on that. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others.